We're back. I'm Paula Gordon, Bruce McKever, a businessman and poet in his own right, Thomas Lux, a poet and, in a modest sense, business person, in that you have an imprint. You have a publishing capability. I don't think of you as a businessman, Tom, but but you do put forth poetry in that way as well. You were talking, Bruce, about being a cobbler. Well, those are shoes you're talking about, cobbling things together, yes. And that sense of you, Tom, you talked about Billy Collins, that sense of giving me feet, putting feet under me, giving me a chance to think more carefully, to put me in the moment. That's what I got from Billy Collins. That's what I'm hearing from you in those hours that go away. There's something eternal about this process. The poet, the poetry, the process itself. And of course, all we have is the moment. Is that your business?
I like the cobbler metaphor that Bruce used because it implies that poems are made things. A cobbler makes shoes. They don't just happen. They don't just fall down the cobbler's arm and onto the cobbler's bench, and there's a pair of shoes.
And preferably they fit.
And they have to fit, and he makes them nail by nail and little cutting by cutting. And poems are made things. That's what the word means. A poet in the ancient Greek means maker, to make. That's why we get lost for hours at a time, because we're making something. And using the word attention, too, Paul Celan, the great German poet, said, attentiveness is the natural prayer of the human soul.
Mm. No matter, do that again.
Attentiveness is the natural prayer of the human soul, Paul Celan. Meaning anything you love that you give real focus and attention to, whether it's art or engineering or business or whatever, or a combination thereof, you really work on it. You focus on it. Your attention is your love. Is an expression of your love for that thing, whatever it is.
I came home from a poetry party last night where you both were, and I'd had quite a day myself, and sat down and reread Bruce McKever's Full Horizon.
Woo.
And I found, and I'd read it before, I had found that I had to read it and then read it again almost immediately, because it was a matter of creating a template in my own brain to then come back and say, okay, now I've got the words there. Now I'm going to read it again to hear those words again, and then I'm going to read it a third time to begin to hear what you're saying to me. Again, I have work to do as the reader or the listener, too, don't I? You talk about the main things.
A certain amount, yes. I mean, you got to put something into reading some poetry, but it should be able to give back to you fairly quickly and without beating your brains out. It should be some kind of fairly equal deal between the reader and the writer. Although I got to be careful about saying what poetry should be or shouldn't be, because there isn't anything poetry should be or shouldn't be. And there's all kinds of poetry, and there's room for all kinds of poetry.
No shoulds in poetry.
Well, no definite shoulds. I mean, except, you know, work hard and learn your craft and read everything and know the tradition.
All of those
love
things,
the thing.
All of those things ring true as I read your poems, Bruce, and the... Bring your heart to it. Know the tradition. Understand the forms. When you sit down to lose those hours together with an idea, do you think about all that?
No, not really. It's very hard for me to find time to do that. I've really had to dig out time from other things to do this, but it is a real joy to work with them. And It's like an inner need to have to say something, you know. I see an idea, and then you just want to beautify it or enhance it or say something about it. It's an inner urge. I can't explain. I mean, I didn't start writing poetry. I started keeping notebooks, and they were in the form of poems. And nobody in my family wrote. I had no tradition of it. Nobody said you ought to write poetry, but I took some workshops in New York. It was a wonderful, it was just how Tom and I met. And New York is wonderful because the really great writers are there and you can work with these people. And by golly, they just, they pulled it out of me.
But you know, you knew enough to go to those workshops.
Well, I wanted to learn.
And he also kept going, too.
That's the thing.
Bruce
it's years and years and years.
Is not like a Sunday painter. I mean, this is something that he's had to do for years and years and years and has made time and sacrifices to be able to write in an incredibly busy life. It is something one doesn't just choose to do. It's either something you have to do or you don't. And my feeling is if you have to do it, whatever it is, making something, any kind of art, then you do it as hard and as long and as well as you can. And you try to honor the art form.
Yeah.
And
we have a friend who is probably, certainly in the golden class of cellists, maybe the best cellist who ever lived, mm-hmm. or ever will live. I like him a lot. Mm-hmm. It's Janos Starker, and he says to young musicians, if there is anything else you can do, any other profession you can follow, do that. Because if you're going to live your life as a professional musician, you have to it has to be the only thing you can do because it consumes you, because you just can't do anything else. Sure. Anything else you should, play and be a Sunday painter, play in the local quartet for weddings or whatever, but if you can't not do it, is that then characteristic of anything that is an art?
I think so. I mean, I think Tom and writers that are full-time writers are incredibly courageous people. Businessmen have it easy. They don't have to, they have to create, but it's to look at that blank page and have to do that every day. I can retreat. I have an excuse, right? That I don't. But Tom doesn't have an excuse. He teaches, but he's got to write. And I go, that is something else. I can put out a book or two books or something, and that's good. And it's sort of extra. But I think to be a full time though, and sometimes I just think what it would be like to be able to write full time and to see, because I can see I've got the vision and such, and I can just start keeping notebooks. Say, God, if I could just write. You want that space. You got to create that space. But the space is so, I guess the fear is that it's just consuming. It sucks you into that. It wants your time. It wants your soul is what it wants, in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
Creativity wants you.
Right. And writing is about 80% reading. And I read huge amounts. If I could, an ideal day for me would be to read for 4 hours in the morning, have lunch, and write for maybe 2 or 3 hours in the afternoon.
Boy.
I don't have the stamina to write for more than 2 or 3 hours straight because it's such a tension. But that would be an ideal day for me. But I also, I'm incredibly lucky in that I love my day job. I love teaching. And I get paid to talk about poetry to kids, to brilliant young men and women, and many, many colleges, not just Georgia Tech over the years. And so that's an unbelievable blessing in life, to be able to earn your living doing the bulk of it, doing something you really love, and talk about the thing you do. The art that you try to make, you talk about other people's art when you're teaching it, but I'm astonished at how lucky I have been in my life, how blessed I have been in my life to be able to live like this.
That's sort of what we all want, isn't it?
Well, I don't think there's a bigger blessing. We have to spend at least a third of our lives, paying the rent and mortgages and things like that, and feeding our children. And if it's something you hate or just don't like that much, but you're making pretty good dough, that would be hell to me. There was a kid at Georgia Tech. He graduated 2 years ago. He was like a aerospace engineering major, brilliant, 3.9 GPA. But he was a poet. He wanted to study poetry, and he's in Stewart's graduate program at North Carolina. But he talked to his dad when he wanted to talk to his dad about this, and his dad I said, look, I've been doing for 24, 25 years something I really don't love doing. And you should go for it. Do what you want to do. You know, he could go, if he wants to go back into the aerospace industry to make a living, he can do that. But I thought that was really, really good of his father to say that. If you love this thing, give it a shot.
I see so many people trapped in, businessmen, really trapped in their jobs. I think so many people are trapped in what they're doing. And they say, well, I really do want to write a book. I really am a poet. First of all, I think everybody's a poet. I think everybody's a poet and a writer and got that creative streak. I think what the problem is, people are afraid to let it out or do it or take it and make it a serious thing because it takes work to do that. But I see so many men and I go, they want to write a book or something. And of course, I grab them and I go, oh, do it. You know, you've made enough, you know, you don't need to raise another whatever the fund is. You know, so many people, they've made so much and then they're going to raise another one and do the same thing. Boring. It is, but they just miss the chance. I think people, you know, just make the effort to let the creative part of themselves out.
We're not going to miss the chance for more creativity in just a minute. Forgive me for interrupting so that I don't have to do it again for another 11 minutes. Be with us when we return with Thomas Lux, Bruce McKever. I'm Paula Gordon. We'll be right back.